You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
The sound of that whip can only mean one thing, that it is time now, once again, to go into the dungeons and hear the screams of painful investors out there. Oh, as we bring on the S&M show.
Don't you think there's always been like too much expectation for the show?
I think so, la.
And then it's like,
that itself is punishment.
Yeah.
Good morning. Salvatore Dali joins us every Wednesday for this very special segment. Indeed. Today we're going to start it off with something new, and it's called
Not the Lex Column. If you're in the financial markets, there is this column which is highly prized by a lot of market watchers. It's called the Lex column, whereby the inner scoops and hot stocks are being discussed. So we're going to bring up this new segment, Not the Lex column, when there are stocks that actually falls into that category. To make it more interesting.
Okay, so do break the tension and tell us what's on your mind this morning.
Yes. Okay, what's hot in the market? MMC.
Oh.
Have a look at MMC as the last 3 days. If you'll notice, there is a very nice perk up in volume being traded, and the market talk, having talked about to a few dealers in town, is that it is likely to go private at a much higher level than what
well,
the current price is.
Well, it was slightly below 230 in February and has gone to 280 currently. Volume hasn't perked up significantly, although it's
that's why I like it. You know what I mean? Is that sometimes stories that get rolled out suddenly, like make the top 10 in volume, which means that there is like a churning process that is going on. Generally, that would be would make the story likely not to be true. But if it's a genuine slow build up, because there's always going to be like somebody somewhere is going to know something before you and I, mm-hmm. And so that gradual build up and the perk up in price seems to reflect that it is probably more believable.
So from a fundamental viewpoint, what do you think is a fair valuation? I mean, the price right now is 280, right?
I think if there is a privatization, it could probably be around 320 to 350.
Okay, that's a sum of parts valuation.
Yes.
And what's in it right now?
It's a lot of things, actually.
Okay, this discussion, of course, this discussion coincides nicely with Kinney Biz, who is doing a full-on, bells and whistles feature on Tan Sri Saad Mokhtar. And as we know, he has got a whole bunch of assets under him. And MMC, of which he controls 52%, has a whole bunch of stuff. 31% in Gas Malaysia, 50% of the MMC Gamuda joint venture, all of Johor Port, 51% of Malakoff, 70% of PTP, the port in Johor, 50% of MMC Gamuda KV MRT, and 39% of Zeeland.
Yeah, actually, okay, this could be a follow-up to, remember our brilliant show, S&M? when we talked about the unbearable lightness of being Saad Mokhtar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And this is probably the aftermath whereby inverted commas, seemingly the group of companies seems to be out of favor, inverted commas. And, taking them private if you see value, might be the logical way to go.
I think this forms a mini GDP figure within the Malaysian GDP, right?
Like, yes.
This really includes almost everything. I wonder how much it contributes to the entire Malaysian GDP.
Well, rice, sugar, gas, transport, ports, automobiles, financial, logistics, construction, postal services, defense. Every key industry is within the Tan Sri Saad Mokhtar fold, and only he really knows the true value of what he's doing. Mm. And the thing is, the market doesn't really give him the valuation he thinks he deserves because of the perceived, at least, government connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think there are a few types of ownership here that I'd like to think aloud about. One is listed ownership, where you have a spread of shareholders. The other one is private ownership. And the other one, of course, is a government, a public ownership, which is key assets, strategic key assets, and productive assets being owned by the nation itself, and this can actually contribute to the nation's growth and productivity. So if you privatize something like MMC, I mean, to start off with, it's monopoly for all intents and purposes already. It should have been under the purview of any MyCC.
MyCC.
Yeah, MyCC, for instance. So, but once you privatize it, then all these key
it becomes,
assets...
ta-da, invisible, right?
Yeah.
Just like how we discussed Star Publications last week, you do a lot of things behind closed doors. Out of the public eye, a lot of magic and wizardry can occur. Same thing with MMC.
That warranted it. Yeah.
But you know, what would be the drivers behind this, Salvatore?
Yeah, why privatize?
Well, like I say, if you're being perceived as being out of favor, you know, there's not much advantage to being listed anymore. And because the market is not according you the kind of valuations that you think you deserve, and hence you might as well, because it is relatively cheap if you actually do the, you know, SOTP. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Sum of parts. The last privatization deal Tan Sri Sanwalker did was with Tradewinds and, you know, the associated companies within. He didn't offer a great deal of premium, but the entrenched value within the organization was interesting.
It was a brilliant buy, and he didn't have to pay a very high price at all. And you're looking at it probably around the same thing for MMC. Anyway. So that's that.
That's quite interesting, actually, indeed, yeah, how this might be the case.
So he might delist the parent of Malakoff. Malakoff is actually coming out, coming public in the not-too-distant future.
Yep.
So he might list the profitable power subsidiary, but keep
the
parent invisible.
Probably if you were in his position with his advisors, you would think about the companies that require funding. You know, some companies are basically, you know, funding hungry. And those are the ones you want to be stay listed, because you need to tap the capital markets a lot more.
And
those that don't require you to do that.
Pregnant pause there.
Very ominous.
Yes. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to talk even more. This is the S&M Ouch Show.
In today's increasingly competitive business environment, being successful in Malaysia is simply not enough. Local businesses need to move their products and services beyond our shores and reach out to a global market. The Economic Transformation Programme brings you the Global Malaysia Series. Join us as we listen to Dato' Sri Nazir Razak, CEO of CIMB Group, on taking this local banking group beyond Malaysia.
Every country is different. You have to go there and understand the country, its rules, its people, its language to do business. Therefore, each country also requires different strategies.
To listen to this exclusive interview, go to etp.pemandu.gov.my. The Global Malaysia Series is brought to you by the Economic Transformation Programme.
Bluff-free medium, PFM 89.9.
Good morning. If you just join us, it's 9:44 in the morning. Now it's time again for the S&M show.
Ooh. And the second part of the Not Deluxe column, they have been trading perk up in the Sona and Click, the specs again over the last week. And a caveat is that we have to be very careful, because it looks like Click is going to announce a qualifying asset proposal soon. What the market is a bit apprehensive and should take into consideration is the fact that whether the asset is going to be in Indonesia, which is if it's in Indonesia, it's probably going to be looked at in a negative way, because if you examine the last 10-20 years, no Malaysian companies have fared well whenever they venture in an oil and gas venture in Indonesia.
In fact, even doing business in Indonesia is not, you know, because if you look at Astro's experience,
we always get conned.
So this is seen as a negative for the aspects.
Yes. And the other caveat is that Sona, which was rumored to be like considering Ribonan Hijau's oil and gas RH in Singapore, that is also a negative. To me, a big negative, because Ribonan does not need the cash to to develop those assets. And if you're buying an existing asset that's already up there for some time, your rate of return is going to be dramatically reduced.
It's a very lazy investment.
Yes.
You know, why buy a listed company? The investors rely on you to seek out good deals, right? But you're buying a listed companies that have got a working asset.
You've aggregated such luminaries of the industries onto your management and board. And all you ever did was just to tap on your network, make a phone call.
You know, one of the fund managers which I quite like to follow is this guy called Chia Cheng Hai in Value Partners. He's actually a guy from Penang, but based in Hong Kong. He's done a good job.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy, right? But one of the things that he always tells investors is you got to ask yourself, why is somebody selling that asset and why are you buying that asset? Yeah. If people are selling that asset, is it because they know something that you don't? Is it because they're trying to get out of it? And if you're trying to buy it, what edge information do you have which the other guys don't know? So, just as it is with RHS assets in Singapore, why is Rimbunan selling it?
And what do they know
that we don't?
That note, actually, it's a very interesting thing because they are not even buying through some kind of a negotiated deal. They are buying through some kind of a private placement, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the price for RH had actually gone up about 30% before the announcement of the private placement. And then Sona actually announced that they would take up a certain percentage of the private placement. I mean, something smells of a rat here.
You've got to, some serious questions need to be asked.
So just the market trading activity has perked up in light of these developments. It's just that investors should be a bit more careful because, to me, those two developing news or rumors in the market, if they come true, one is Indonesia, the other is RH, are not entirely positive.
Which doesn't do a great deal of good for efforts by the regulators to enhance the credibility of our capital markets, because the more such transactions occur, the more questions you ask of major owners and the deals that they do and the prices that they pay. You know, I mean, of course, this comes on the back of what, 2 days ago, the SCA fined Randhill Energy and the CEO for not telling the market that it had lost a license, which would have hurt nearly half of their group revenue. So, and that the fine itself wasn't very big.
That's just extremely naughty, right?
Extremely naughty. And to me, the promoters as well, assuming they knew about it, should also have been culpable. But at the end of the day, it's a 735 million ringgit deal and you're being fined half a million? That's 0.6%. But anyway, I mean, this all goes to the credibility of the markets.
And it really is all about strengthening the regulatory environment, the regulatory supervision, the kind of signals that you're sending to minority shareholders. I think that we need really to beef up on that. And I think SC took the right first step in actually imposing these kind of fines.
Is it a first, though?
I don't think so.
No, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, there were one or two others recently as well.
But the quantum of the fine is also something...
It's a bit smaller.
300,000 peanuts.
What is 300,000 to, to you and me, that's a fortune.
Of course.
It's a lifetime.
It's such a charade thing.
The sun just...
The more I say it, it's going to get me into trouble.
You're on the S&M show.
Okay, 9:50 in the morning now on the S&M show. If you just joined us together with Salvatore Dali, you've got something else that you want to say as well.
Well, I just want to bounce this off you guys because talking about the regulatory environment, regulatory supervision, right? Uh-huh. Is this issue of IPO pricing? And right now, the investment bankers actually play a very active, interventionist, strong role in guiding the final IPO pricing. And when we come to the listing date, the gong day itself, you see stocks like Caring Pharmacy shooting up, UMW shooting up. And even if we go overseas, Malaysia is not only a special case, but overseas, Twitter has almost doubled from its IPO price. You had the Royal Mail in the UK jumping up significantly IPO. So the question is there some mispricing in IPO? And this mispricing is significant because it prevents the company from getting precious capital for their expansionary purposes.
Okay, first and foremost, how is a valuation or a price put onto shares in the first place? Is it based on it's based on number of million of shares. How many shares are issued versus how much they intend to
Well, it is a total, what we call enlarged capital.
All right.
and they basically look at the industry that they're operating in, and usually looking at the market average, and they would take usually a slight discount. Fair enough, I can understand totally why investment bankers would want to shoot for, you need to leave something on the, some crumbs on the table for people to benefit. Mm. But
who are these people? I mean, that's exactly my beef.
The market.
No, but it's not the market, because you are leaving crumbs on some returns on the table for selected investors who are lucky enough to be awarded this lottery, right? So you're not actually talking about the market. If you want to protect investors' interests, you're supposed to price it fairly. And obviously, there is differentiation between IPO money going into the company itself and for shareholders selling directly to the public.
So when you have good pricing, I mean, the company wants it to be priced higher. The bankers don't want it to be that high. Otherwise, it's
If you look at it from the company itself, it should and can raise as much money as it can grow the business. That's the whole ideal behind capital markets, right? Mm. But we can see this whole issue arise. You know, for example, the big juicy issues and a very, very small minimum allocation for retailers and the maximum possible for institutional investors. But
as in Westpac's case, 50% of half of the cornerstone went to only cornerstone placing went only to two investors, and those are foreign investors as well.
And basically, these are the best buddies of the promoters themselves, right, or the bankers themselves. So, I mean, then it goes back to the pricing mechanism and how it is massaged to their benefit, because down the line there could be deals that emanate as a result of your preferential treatment. And now
I don't think that investment bankers should be given such a big role to earn money. I think that those money would be more well placed if they were either used to buffer the company's capital, or give some of those returns back to investors. The reduction in the cost of managing share prices can lower IPO pricing, the cost of listing, right?
It can. When Google, right, which in itself says that it shouldn't be evil and don't be evil, it went through the IPO, its own IPO at the time, via Dutch auction, and there were no promoters involved. No bankers involved.
Well, there were bankers involved, but they were not actively involved in the pricing. So the pricing was done at the level which cleared the market, basically removed the highest price that cleared the
market. I mean, the fairest system probably would be the Dutch auction. What can you say?
So why don't we do that over here?
Well, because of the intrinsic vested interest.
Who gets all the biggest deals in town? And who owns that?
It's probably not going to happen anytime soon in Malaysia, because certain funds get allocated certain IPO shares so that they should make some money. Blah, 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 blah.
That was warranted, lah. but that's the case. As the case goes, we're still seeing apparently, there are supposed to be two more IPOs in the pipeline, before the end of the year.
Well, Malakoff is one of them.
Okay.
Unless they've just kicked the can down the road a bit more.
Or they want to keep everything private.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, and of course, TT Jaya as well is coming on.
TT Jaya, lovely name. I love it. I wonder what the Bloomberg RIC will be. Will it be TITIMK?
Rumors are that it is going to be.
I suppose so. Okay, tell you what, why don't we get to our song of the week? What have you got for us this week? Huh?
Yeah, songs that we'll hear once every 50 years.
Because we're not of the same vintage.
Yeah,
is that right?
Well, have you heard of the country Zaire?
Zaire, the Rumble in the Jungle, where Ali met Foreman?
Yeah. So after the probably the most exciting boxing match ever. Johnny Wakelin, together with the Kinshasa band did a sort of a tribute, and the song is called In Zaire. It's wonderful.
Okay, we'll take a listen.
Brings back memories.
Don't forget, every Wednesday, join Salvatore Dali here on the S&M show. Or if you want more of him, just pop on over to his website. It's malaysiafinance.blogspot.com. So till next Wednesday again, from all of us here at the S&M show, have yourselves a good trading week.
Thousand people there
in Zaire,
all
BFM 89.9, the business station.